Today we'll cover some major signings, an important trade, and I'll give you a talented player that I'm avoiding in drafts. Plus, I'll share my interview with Padres reporter Kevin Acey. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball.
I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it.
There's been a bevy of signings in the last week as the hot stove is starting to really heat up. So let's take a look at a couple major signings here. Well, more than a couple. There's been two closers signed in the last week. Brad Hand was signed by the Nationals, and Kirby Yates was signed by the Blue Jays. The Nats have been slowly addressing all of their offseason needs. They needed a corner outfielder, signed Schwarber. They needed a left-handed reliever and signed Hand. They needed a back-of-the-rotation arm and signed Lester. And all of those deals are for 1 year and below a right on market value. Plus, they traded for a much needed middle of the order bat in Josh Bell. Brad Hand likely slots in as a closer in Washington. Some people are going to point to his declining fastball velocity and say that that's something to worry about. But you know, if you look, he doesn't really rely too much on his fastball. He throws his slider more often, and according to pitch values on FanGraphs, it's his best pitch by far. He's been an elite reliever the last five seasons, and I don't really expect that to change. If he wasn't a top five reliever for you going into this season, he should be viewed that way after signing with an improving Washington team. The other big kind of closer signing was Kirby Yates going to the Blue Jays. And I'm saying closer, it's very likely he's the closer in Toronto. Over the last 3 years, aside from 2020, where he only pitched four innings due to injury, he's steadily decreased his ERA. He's been able to decrease his ERA for a couple of reasons. He's gradually decreased the amount of walks and home runs he's allowed. He's been elite at stranding runners on base. He's also developed a wicked splitter over the last 3 years that's helped him induce weak contact and get a lot of strikeouts. I think he's a closer there. They have some guys that closed last season, but there are some reasons that I think he ends up being the closer there. I think he's closer to the mid 2 ERA pitcher than the low 1 ERA pitcher that we saw in 2019. You know, in 2019, he benefited from an incredibly low 4% home run to fly ball rate. I expect that to even out a bit to league average this season, around 11-12%. If he can continue to limit walks and home runs, I think you have to value him as a top 10 closer. That team is improving by a lot. He's a candidate for a major bounce back. Savvy fantasy baseball managers will ignore the 2020 stats, but you know he might get overlooked in your league. So he's definitely worth being one of the first 10 closers off the board. You have Garrett Richards signed with Boston, and so the Red Sox definitely needed pitching. They needed to add depth to their rotation, and so you know this is a reason why they signed him. The Red Sox beat writer Jim McCaffrey has noted that although Richards has dealt with quite a few injuries in his career, through his last 31 starts, he's posted a 3.36 ERA. He had a promising year for the Padres in 2020 where his fastball hit 95 miles per hour and he showed a wipeout slider. I like this outlook on him. I think he'll go into the season not on a lot of people's radars, but I think you're pending health. He has been a health risk the last few years. He could be a nice option to add off waivers. He's definitely someone I'm going to put on my watch list for the season. He's also shown that he can come out of the bullpen, so he may be a candidate to do that. When Chris Sale returns in the summer, that would limit his value. So I'd say stay away from drafting Garrett Richards, but definitely keep an eye on him. Boston also signed super utility man Enrique Kike Hernandez. I wouldn't normally talk about a super utility man being a fantasy baseball commodity, but he's likely to get a serious amount of playing time, especially at second base in the outfield where the Red Sox were desperate for help. Given consistent playing time, I think you could see a 15 to 20 home run season, a 240 average. You know, he probably won't be batting early enough in the lineup to pick up other counting stats, but a multiple position eligible player getting you 20-ish home runs has his value, especially in AL-only leagues and in deep leagues. The biggest deal of the past week was catcher JT Realmuto re-signing with the Phillies for 5 years and $115 million, which is the biggest deal ever for a catcher in terms of average annual value. So per ESPN since 2018, Realmuto leads all catchers in wins above replacement, RBI, and stolen bases. He's second in slugging and OPS, and he's third in home runs. He is a complete player, even defensively. Now, you have to figure if the NL has a designated hitter that they give him days off behind the plate to DH, which actually could increase his value. If he wasn't playing catcher in previous seasons, he was on the bench. So they have a shot to actually keep his bat in the lineup if we see the DH in the NL. Now, he's easily the top catcher. The tricky part is deciding where to draft him. How do you value him? And it's tricky because you know you're getting the best catcher in baseball, and it's not very close. But let's say, you know, in a standard 10-team league, do you take him in round 5 where he's kind of valued at the expense of other talented hitters who might get you more production at other positions? JD Martinez, Eugenio Suarez, Aaron Judge. Do you take Realmuto over talented young players like Randy Arozarena and Trent Grisham? Do you draft him ahead of Kenta Maeda or Lance Lynn? So these are the things that you kind of have to think about. And it's a tough spot because he does produce so much for a catcher, but you have to decide if it's worth it for you to draft him relative to those other players around him. So personally, I'll wait on drafting a catcher. But again, you know, mock drafts are really valuable to see where these players are being taken. Tommy La Stella was signed by the Giants, and I've been waiting to see where he went because I think he's hugely undervalued in fantasy baseball. I preached this last season and the season before. Traditionally, Tommy La Stella does better against right-handed pitchers, so I think it's likely, at least to start this season, we see a pretty hard platoon split with Donovan Solano in San Fran, but I really think La Stella is going to make himself more valuable than Solano by season's end. Solano was super streaky in 2020, and it was a bit fluky. His BABIP was insanely high, and previous to 2019, he'd never hit above 295, and you know, most of the other seasons were around 250, 240. In 2019, he also had a super high BABIP that kind of inflated his average. Solano's 5% walk rate and 20% strikeout rate will not sustain a 300 batting average year after year, and he has no pop whatsoever in his bat. La Stella, on the other hand, walks more, strikes out less, he's adjusted his launch angle to put the ball in the air more, and he's a much, much more disciplined hitter. I think by the end of this season, we see La Stella being used more than Solano in San Francisco, despite the platoon numbers. And you know, I just think the value he brings to the San Francisco lineup is going to be seen by fantasy managers as well. I don't think a 20 home run season is out of the question in a very sneaky, decent Giants lineup. Marcus Semien was signed by the Blue Jays to a 1 year, $18 million deal. He joined Springer in a very deep offensive lineup. I'll be interested to see how the team decides to align its defense. My guess is we're going to see some combination of Semien and Bichette at third and short, Biggio at second, and Vlad Jr. at first. Semien had a rough 2020, but a career year in 2019. I don't think we see him replicate that 33 home run, 123 run, 92 RBI, 10 steal season in 2019. But I certainly think he'll be able to get close. If anything, I think we see a flip in the RBI and run numbers. I think 25 home runs is probably more realistic for Semien, but it's worth it to watch it to see if the team plays in their Florida spring training park instead of Toronto, you know, because there is a chance that his home run output increases because of the ballpark. Andrelton Simmons was signed by the Twins. Now to me, he is not fantasy relevant. So why am I talking about him right now? I want you to ignore him. Or I don't want you to draft him. Don't be that guy. Even in a lineup like Minnesota, I would let him go undrafted. He's a career 270 hitter, but gets drafted like a 300 hitter, even though he's never batted 300. He has no power. He's been in the single digits for home runs in 6 of his 9 seasons, including a big old zero in 2020. It would also be, you know, one thing if he stole some bases, but he doesn't really do that either. He's had one season of more than 10 steals and only hit double digits in 4 of his 9 seasons. He gets at bats because he's one of the best defensive shortstops in the league, you know, but he's not productive in his at bats. I will never understand why he gets drafted in fantasy, even in deep leagues. You can find better players. And finally, Michael Brantley re-signed with the Houston Astros for 2 more years. There was a weird hiccup where it looked like he was signing with the Blue Jays. It was even reported that a deal was done, but something happened for him to back out, or the Blue Jays backed out, and he returned to the Astros. I don't think I'm going to tell you anything new about Brantley. He's really good. You can't really go wrong with drafting him. You know the type of player you're going to get. He's consistently around a 300 batting average. He doesn't have a ton of pop. He'll get you maybe 20 or so home runs, which is good, but he fills up the RBI and run columns. He gets on base, so he's valuable in OBP and points leagues as well. One thing I don't like about Brantley that keeps me from drafting him every year is he hits a lot of ground balls, an average of about 47%, right? You typically want to see that number closer to 40% than 50%. He also doesn't produce a ton of hard contact, which is naturally going to limit the home run production. So what I will say is, if you're drafting a lot of batters with solid power numbers, but at the expense of batting average, Brantley's probably going to be a great pick to balance that out. I view him as a top 30 to 40 outfielder. So, you know, if I did draft him, he'd probably be my third outfielder. But personally, I'm going to look elsewhere. In the coming weeks, as we get ready for the season, I'll be doing some episodes on draft strategy. And that should kind of explain why, you know, even though he's a solid player, he's actually somebody I avoid. Right now, though, let's get into a major deal that happened last week.
Deal or no deal?
Pittsburgh Pirate Jameson Taillon was traded to the Yankees for a package of prospects. Taillon is recovering from his second Tommy John surgery, which is a little worrying. The elbow weakens with each time this happens, and typically if somebody's having multiple Tommy John surgeries, the time in between injuries gets shorter and shorter. So that does scare me a bit. Taillon had been one of the top arms in the Pirates system for a while, coming up through the minors with Gerrit Cole, whom he's reuniting with in New York. Taillon has never really been a strikeout guy, averaging about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings in the majors. Good, not great. That's going to limit some of his value in fantasy, especially if you're in points leagues where strikeouts are extremely valuable. However, he does limit walks and home runs, and he induces a lot of ground balls, which is what you need in a stadium like New York. He's extremely good at limiting hard contact. He has a 5-pitch mix, but leaned on the fastball curveball slider combo in 2018 when he had his best season in the majors. I think that season, 2018, is probably the ceiling. His ceiling for the moment. I'd conservatively expect sort of a mid-3 ERA without too many strikeouts in 2021. I expect the Yankees to be conservative with his innings going into this season, and that might limit his ability to pick up wins and quality starts. So that's something to note, that could limit his value. The team does have some good pitching returning to fill in innings, so they have players like Davey Garcia and Clark Schmidt, who are young guys that could be, you know, really valuable in fantasy. Jordan Montgomery is coming back as well, and the team should have a healthy Luis Severino, but we've seen him have his injury issues. Domingo Herman is also coming back to the pitching staff after being suspended for violating MLB's domestic abuse policy last season. So that rotation is definitely something to pay attention to in spring training. You know, figuring out how they're going to use different players and seeing what sort of innings they're giving to their guys. The Yankees made another move this week, sending Adam Ottavino to the Red Sox in a rare divisional trade for the AL East. On the surface, a trade for a reliever may not seem fantasy relevant, but the Red Sox bullpen is not very deep at the moment, to say the least, and Ottavino could have a major impact. Red Sox reporter Jim McCaffrey has tweeted that Ottavino has spent the offseason working on creating different angles and different types of breaks to his breaking balls, and that can make him a little bit better. He's got a high strikeout per nine rate over the last few years. He does have some save experience, though not a ton. You know, now he did have an ERA near six in 2020, but it was only in 18 innings. The BABIP was super high, which for a pitcher means he was dealing with some bad luck or bad defense. And, you know, he had some bad luck in a high home run to fly ball rate. And really, it was one game last season that really spiked all of those things. That's the bad side of a small sample size. Now, advanced ERA metrics like FIP, XFIP, and Sierra have his ERA last season closer to like a 3.5, 3.6 ERA, which is much better and much closer to his career ERA. So that's probably what we should see in a full season, hopefully, fingers crossed. So he relies heavily on his fastball-slider combination. And, you know, if what he's saying is true about making adjustments to improve the breaking ball, then he should very likely compete for the closer role in Boston and could be really valuable. In a moment, I'll share my interview with Padres reporter Kevin Acey right after a word from my sponsor. Joining me today is Kevin Acey, who covers the Padres for the San Diego Union-Tribune. Kevin, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
So the Padres have been super active this offseason, especially in the trade market. Was this a strategy that was sort of a long time coming, or do you think this came out of a successful 2020 season? They're sort of pushing now to challenge the Dodgers, or kind of like a combination of all of that?
It's a good way to put it, a combination. And then add in that a new owner took over, and what it is Peter Seidler was always one of the principal owners of the team, but Ron Fowler, who was the executive chairman, he controlled the team on a daily basis. There's only one of the owners who's allowed to kind of be the point person for MLB, and that was Ron Fowler. Well, Ron decided to retire, sold a good portion of his shares to Peter Seidler, and Peter Seidler's now in charge. There's a little bit of a different philosophy there. They would not have been this active under Ron Fowler. There's virtually no doubt. That said, it was a little bit of a plan that AJ Preller had was, you know, depending on how fast all these, you know, people in their farm system, these young kids that they knew were good, other teams knew were good, how quickly were they able to help at the major league level, or some of them, how, you know, attractive were they to other teams? Then AJ Preller knew he could, you know, either have them, you know, guy ascend to be on the major league roster, or he could turn them into major league players that are proven once the team knew that it was good. And so there is the part of your question about the 2020 season. So yes, now is the time. That was my long answer to say you were correct.
So a part of those acquisitions, a lot of those acquisitions this offseason have been pitching. And so they have control. The team has control of a lot of these pitchers already on the team, and ones that they've acquired for at least a couple more years, if I'm not mistaken. So what does the team do, you know, when, like, if everyone's healthy, when Clevinger comes back? You know, I know you tweeted about the team using a six-man rotation potentially. There's rumors that, like, maybe Denelson Lamet isn't totally healthy with the elbow. Just kind of wondering how you see things shaking out in the rotation.
We'll say everybody's healthy than this year. And so obviously Clevinger not around this year after Tommy John surgery. But let's say everyone's healthy this year. They could possibly go, and I would say, gosh, closer to probably go early in the season with a six-man rotation, depending on what the schedule is like. You know, if, let's say spring training doesn't start on time, and then they're crowding in games a little bit like they did last year, I could easily see a six-man rotation. Let's say spring training and the season do start on time, I could still see it early on to give guys a chance to build up, especially since last year they played 60 games, guys made between say 10 and 13 starts, and this year you'd be back to normal. It just, you know, if you've got a lot of quality pitchers and a way to keep guys healthy, plus a little something that people should keep an eye on, Blake Snell has been pitching for the Tampa Bay Rays and not really asked to go beyond, you know, six right. innings. He's got to build up, and that's going to take a while, you know, a month, two, I would think a month at least, that, you know, get this guy up. But I mean, like, he's really never done the whole 7-8 innings that you would want and expect from your ace. And so there's just a lot of factors that made sense for them to at least consider strongly a six-man rotation. As for next year with Clevinger, because it's a really good point by you that this wasn't just for 1 year. Joe Musgrove is on board for 2 years under team control. Yu Darvish and Blake Snell for three. Denelson Lamet for two more. Paddock for, what, four more. Clevinger next year only, as in 2022. But look, it'll be a competition, man. And, you know, someone could be traded, I guess. But you're just – I hate it. I'm trying to find a way to say something besides the cliche, which is you can't have too much good pitching.
Right. That's true. And one thing I was wondering about, you kind of made me think about this, is with the six-man rotation and potentially, you know, keeping these guys on a potential pitch count because of, mm-hmm. or an innings limit because of a shortened season. Is there any, long reliever, like kind of like a spot starter or somebody in the rotation who can maybe stretch out a little bit, or in the bullpen rather, yeah. that can kind of stretch out a little bit that you see as sort of valuable under the radar?
Absolutely. And especially, let's say they go with a five-man rotation, and this just brings up how they have so many options. But you've got Adrian Morahone, you got Ryan Weathers, guys that will be stretched out in spring training, guys that they see long-term as starters. And so, gosh, you could have, heck, let's say Adrian Morahone is just dealing, and they're really high on Adrian Morahone. And then it's Chris Paddock, your long guy. Now, I don't in any way mean to suggest that I don't think that Chris Paddock will bounce back, because I tend to think that he will bounce back based on kind of the career he's had already. He right. doesn't deserve to have so much doubt about what he has done. But they just have so many options, including guys who can kind of bridge a gap while starters are stretching out.
And you noted in one of your recent articles something that I, you know, kind of like picked out in this Joe Musgrove trade. You mentioned that he changed his mechanics mm-hmm. and he changed his pitch usage, and that seems to have sort of like given him a totally new output, basically. Yeah. So what sort of season do you think he can have in San Diego, especially, you know, in a traditionally pitcher-friendly park with a good defense behind him?
If he stays healthy and continues to do what he's doing, and I'll dive deeper into it probably in the spring, but, I mean, just got to completely – wow, the spin rate, and I want to get too, like, deep into this stuff, but, like, I mean, he just really altered the way that he pitched, and the last month of the season, it wasn't necessarily like, say, his best four or five starts in a row, but it was right up there. And that is what the Padres are hoping that they got and believe they got, because this guy has, you know, always had that potential. I forget the 35th pick overall or something in 2011. I mean, this is a power pitcher that has a lot of different pitches that seem to be where, gosh, if this is your number four starter or even your number three starter, right. and he's living up to what he has done for flashes in his career, that's pretty darn good.
And so on top of a stellar rotation, the Padres have an extremely deep bullpen, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering who handles the lion's share of the saves. Is it Pagan, Pomeranz, someone else, a committee?
Great question. Great question. And they're going to tell us that it's going to be, you know, whoever makes sense, right? Like if it makes sense to bring Pomeranz in the eighth, well, then that's what they'll do. And because they have Pagan, or they have, heck, they have Morahone, or they have Jose Castillo, if he could stay healthy. That's a guy with closer stuff. Javi Guerra, you know, that's a guy with closer stuff. Well, there's a difference between having closer stuff and being a closer. So, I mean, it's still a question, and I wouldn't rule out that they're going to sign Trevor Rosenthal, but it seems like the market, at least where it's at now, is not something they're willing to invest at that high of a level. But the longer it goes on, maybe that's good for them, that they could bring Trevor Rosenthal back. But the depth that they have is key. That's the, you know, they have a lot of guys, and a lot of guys who throw hard. And you got Austin Adams with his fastball, his slider, Dan Altavilla. And I'm not saying these guys are closers, but they just have a lot of options for the back end. And if they can have the rotation that they think they have, you know, their bullpen should be pretty primed to go most nights because of that depth that they have.
Right. So kind of switching over into hitting, Austin Nola had somewhat of a breakout year last season. Do you think we'll see him replicate his productivity from 2020?
Sure, because I think that was something that people saw as trending upward. He wasn't spectacular for the Padres. I was impressed with how he caught, and more importantly, so were they. We'll see what happens. I think he'll be the primary catcher. They got Victor Caratini. They have Luis Campusano. I would think that Campusano would start the season in the minors, or he can get some playing time, but that's a kid that obviously they're very high on. They would not trade him. They always said they wouldn't, and they've held on to him. He's right up there with CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, in terms of guys that they just weren't going to trade. So that speaks very highly of him and what they think. But I just think that the veteran options they have now, that you will see Nola getting the lion's share. I don't see them going with three catchers, but you know what? That could depend on the kind of spring that Campusano has.
And Jake Cronenworth was another kind of somewhat surprisingly productive player in 2020, at least for, you know, people not around the San Diego, you know, system. So what do you expect out of him in 2021? Is he starting at second?
Well, everything that he did last year showed that he's got staying power, that, you know, this whole rookie of the year race and you know, that's one of the awards that, like, it really doesn't matter. It just doesn't mean anything. It depends on the strength of the rookie class. There were a lot of good rookies last year, and there was an argument for Jake Cronenworth to be the rookie of the year. And I think that the way he did it, even rebounding in the postseason a little bit, I think that this guy's going to be playing a lot at second base. Now, of course, they got Ha-Sung Kim to play, and I think that you'll see him at second base a fair amount, as long as he's making the adjustment to the majors. And you might see one or both of them. I certainly think you're going to see one or both of them take an outfield glove and work in the spring, and then we'll see how it goes. But that's the kind of depth that the Padres are trying to have. They're trying to have Dodgers-like depth, where guys can play two and three positions and start, and you have these different starting lineups all the time, and different guys that different places. I mean, that's a big thing with Jurickson Profar too. And so I don't know where it is or who will be getting the most of the starts at second. And I'm not really sure it matters, because I think that if guys are hitting, see, that's the thing about having depth. If guys are hitting, they'll play them.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about Kim. You kind of answered that already, but I was curious to see, you know, cause he came up as third baseman and shortstop, and, you know, obviously those positions are taken for the Padres. So I was curious to see where you think he would slot.
If you have the DH spot too, which I still think that they will, then you can give guys rest and he can play in those spots there. The versatility is, you know, like I said, big. And I think his willingness and what they want to do in terms of the versatility, I think that if he is making the adjustment to the big league fastballs, then I think Ha-Sung Kim be in the lineup too. Now, eventually you keep asking me about guys, and we're going to run out of spots, but hey, Again, yeah. That's not a problem the Padres have had before. So it's a problem. And I know that, you know, here's another cliche, but it's a good problem to have. And but like, people try to say that all the time, like, oh, we got too many good players. No, you don't. But though the Padres are on their way to being like the Dodgers, where they've got enough good players that it actually could be a thing where, wow, why isn't this guy playing tonight? Well, because all these other guys are playing well. We like this matchup.
Right. And one other player that is very good is Fernando Tatis. In 2020, we saw a little dip in batting average, but a huge spike in power, which is a trend for a lot of players kind of selling out for power. Do you think that's something he was doing sort of intentionally last year? Do you think 2021 he like puts it all together, and what do you see as sort of the ceiling?
Well, you're right, there was a dip, but if that's a dip, with that then surge in power, they'll take it. And I just think mm-hmm. that's Fernando Tatis Jr.'s natural power. He can pretty much do anything. Yes, absolutely. That's intentional, but what was it still? Was it 270 or I forget.
Yeah, it was around 270.
And his on-base was still up there. I know that there was a, you know, heck, the guy played almost every day. I know it was only 60 games, but that was a tough season. It just was. So a lot of people that felt like, man, in some ways that was harder than 162 games. I don't think that it actually was, but I'll tell you, as someone who covered it, it was pretty trying, and I was super impressed with all of that was on Fernando Tatis Jr., all that he was talked about, how important it is to him, how the Padres were in the race the whole time, that he held up like he did. Mm-hmm. I thought that was maybe a more impressive season than we tend to think it was. I mean, because, you know, we do tend to think like this guy hasn't even played a full season. And I don't mean that neither one of these seasons has been a full 162. He hasn't played 162 games in his 2 years in Major League Baseball.
And so my last question for you is a multi-part question, and you've kind of hit some of these people already. But so despite all of the trades, the Padres have somehow been able to hang on to their top guys. And so I'm just wondering what you think in terms of, you know, if we see these prospects in 2021, how much you think we see of them, you know, what sort of production we get, you know, what sort of production they get in the majors. And so, you know, Mackenzie Gore is obviously the top guy, if not one of the top guys in the system. You mentioned Ryan Weathers and Luis Campusano, who got, you know, a handful of time. But I'm just curious to see if you think they're, if we see them in 2021, how much and what sort of production do you think we see?
I would rate it like we see Weathers, we see Campusano, we see Gore. Now, that might seem counterintuitive, Gore being the top prospect. Now, he could have an incredible spring and just light it up in the minors and be up because he deserves to be up. But, you know, this isn't the old days when Joey Lucchese and Nick Margavichus and Eric Lauer were, you know, up in the majors with barely any minor league experience because the Padres weren't very good and they were giving those guys experience. This isn't that anymore. So Mackenzie Gore will seriously have to earn his way to the majors. And he had kind of a rough season, which wasn't really a season. It was at the alternate site. My understanding from many people is he's had a really good off season. And if he has the character that everyone thinks he has, including me, he'll bounce back because he certainly has the talent. So he could be there, but that could depend on health. What if the Padres are entirely healthy? There is virtually no, and unless Mackenzie Gore is just unhittable at AAA, I just don't see him coming up. Now, they want him to be a starter. Now, maybe circumstances, and in those circumstances, they say, you know what? We're going to have Mackenzie Gore be kind of a two or three inning guy for us. I don't know. Ryan Weathers right away could be more that long reliever kind of guy. They just feel like his stuff is that, and they're more willing to do that with him. So that's why I say, gosh, you could see Ryan Weathers before Mackenzie Gore. But you could see neither. I mean, the fact was he came up in the playoffs because they absolutely had to have him. He did a fantastic job for one appearance. He's still very young and very, very inexperienced. We already talked about Campusano, mm-hmm. CJ Abrams. I don't think that you're going to see him, unless, you know, you got a lot of injuries. And again, he's hitting 500 or something, you know, double A, triple A. You know, this isn't the old days, right, where you could bring up Franmil Reyes and, oh, cool, look how well he's doing. Like, but they had to have Franmil Reyes. There was no choice at that time in 2018 because they stunk. Presumably, that's not going to be the case for the Padres this year unless they have a lot of injuries.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for sharing your time with me and sharing your insight on the Padres.
My really pleasure, man. Take care.
You too. I want to take a minute to thank my guest, Kevin Acey, again. Starting next week, I'll begin a series on draft prep, and I'll be doing a recap of several sabermetric stats that you can look into as you scout for your coming season and that you can use to make decisions during the season. So make sure you've subscribed so you're notified when those episodes published. New episodes out every Wednesday. I also have some very cool big news. I'm going to be writing fantasy baseball and baseball betting articles for thegameday.com. So check out my articles there. The first one should be published by early next week. I'll be writing about some things that I cover here on the podcast, but there's chances I'm going to spend more time on certain players that I don't cover here, or might even go more in depth with players that I don't have time to cover on the podcast. Or I might just write about entirely different stuff. So make sure you check out thegameday.com. Finally, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps move my podcast up the list on the various podcast platforms when people search for fantasy baseball. So it's something that really helps me out. Follow me on Instagram at @FastballFantasyBaseball and on Twitter at @FastballPod. And feel free to email the show at @FastballFantasyBaseball with any comments, questions, or ideas. Thanks for listening.